Okay, and before we send you off to college, I wanted to ask, how did you make the transition between moving from STAIR, both academically and socially, from the smaller town with a very small school to then a junior high that has three different classes for one grade and an honors program and I would assume more kind of choices and the kind of courses you were able to take?
Well, I made that transition pretty easy, I think. I don't remember any real trauma associated with it. My brother was with me, so and he was considerably more gregarious than I. So I think, if I remember now, most of the friends that we had were his friends, or most of the friends I had were his friends. I didn't find the the coursework any more difficult. Now, I don't know if that speaks volumes for the STAIR Public School District or or speaks down for the Dallas Independent Public School District, but I didn't struggle in the class. John, my brother, didn't do as well, even starting at that point, then all the way on through high school. But I think that's because he, let's say, didn't apply himself intellectually, you know, began to focus on other endeavors. So he struggled quite a bit in high school academically and socially too. But I don't recall having any problems with that transition. That's about the time I started playing organized basketball, which helped a lot.
And you probably get to ask this question a lot because you're living in Dallas in 63, 62. Where, you know, how did you experience the JFK assassination?
Well, I guess I didn't understand the impact of it. Mm-hmm. What I understood most was that it was disruptive in the community. In fact, so if you remember, allegedly Lee Harvey Oswald left the scene close to the Triple Underpass where Kennedy was shot, and went across the Trinity River to a movie theater, and that happened to be in Oak Cliff on Jefferson Street. It's called the Texas Movie Theater. And that's about two blocks from my high school. And there, allegedly, he shot Trippett, the Dallas policeman. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of activity around the high school that day. And, of course, this was in November when basketball season was starting. And at that time, I was riding the bus back and forth from home to high school. And there wasn't a direct route from the high school to our house in the Cedar Crest part of Oak Cliff. We had to go take a bus to downtown and then transfer to go out. Well, nobody was getting in and out of downtown. Very few people were leaving the Oak Cliff area where the Texas Theater and Adamson High School was. So it took forever for me to get home that evening. And then a similar the same sort of degree of difficulty was required the next day to go to school, not because school was canceled the next day, but because I had basketball practice. They don't cancel basketball practice. So I guess, as callous as it sounds, I don't, you know, remember much about my thinkings on the impact. I mean, we watched the TV, of course, but I was more concerned with trying to get around town.
Right.
And but when I look back on it and think about the people that I talked to, not only on those days and that weekend, but the months and the years to come, the impact that that event had on that large community was enormous on Dallas. Mm. And I think they still feel that way. Mm. So I guess it was a defining moment in the history of Dallas, but it wasn't so much for me.
Well, at your high school, where you have, you know, different, you're able to take your science classes, how did, and go on these special field trips, how did the teachers respond or identify this interest in science, or being even after this one field trip being turned on to the idea that you could, you know, work in a research institution setting?
Well, that was the only field trip I ever took.
Okay.
We didn't go with Mrs. to the the bread bakery, or
you didn't go to the Alamo or anything like that.
Well, those weren't that. Yeah, everybody did that, but that wasn't a field trip related to science. I can't think of any other outside.
Were they able to encourage an interest in?
Well, Ken Beshear did. There's no question about that. I mean, when he, and I think I mentioned that he, I kind of served as a lab aide. You know, would help prepare equipment and experiments for the next class. But from that point on, the science classes got pretty small. So I think every student had to take biology in the DISD. But chemistry wasn't required, so there were maybe, I think there were only about 20, there's only one class of chemistry in my high school, and there were only about 20 or 25 students. And then nobody took physics. Well, nobody. I mean, I took physics, but I think the class was like 10 or 12. So that was it. So there wasn't a lot. And then usually the physics teacher, like the chemistry teacher, only taught those once for each semester. And then they spent the rest of the time either teaching general science or health or history or whatever. So there wasn't a framework of teachers that could set about to that could encourage students in a systematic manner. I mean, it was kind of secondary, elevated levels of science. I mean, biology was where it stopped, because you could encourage students maybe to take a degree in biology and become a teacher, or take a degree in biology and try to get into med school. But I don't recall anybody saying to me, you know, well, listen, you know, if you have a degree in chemistry, then you can work for Dow Chemical, or if you have a degree in physics, then, you know, you can, they're doing lots of neat things down here at NASA, so you can get a job down there. I don't remember anybody saying anything about that.
Did you take any field trips to NASA?
No. Oh. Not at that time. No. It's never, I never liked Houston. Houston seems so much
That's
different.
It's a Dallas thing.
Yeah.
Because Houston said
only
Dallas.
That's right. Well, the weather down there is just that, it's worse than it is up here. It's humid and hot, and there's no winter at all, and it's more of a sprawl than there is in Dallas, and I just didn't even like visiting Houston.
Okay, and what were the expectations on the students as to what they were going to do after high school, in your high school?
Well, I guess the biggest expectation was to get a job.
Okay.
And just join the workforce. Mm-hmm. Along those lines, there, a lot of people after graduating would, at that time, a lot of the young men went in the Army. Either by enlistment, so I guess the options were that if you enlisted for 3 years, then you had some kind of say as to what training you would get, not necessarily where you would go, but whether you were going to be trained for an aircraft mechanic or a gunner or whatever. Whereas if you waited until you were drafted, then you got no say. So that was always a dilemma for young guys. If you got a job and were waiting to be drafted, then you might start taking some courses at a recently created, like Dallas County Junior College, which is, like, I think in California there's junior college districts. Well, that thing sort of started up in Dallas in the 70s. So these were a good opportunity to get your feet wet beyond the high school level and to see if you really like doing it. Most of those failed, you know, because you never put your heart into it, I think. But it kind of kept them off the streets for a while. Mostly it was getting a job or going in the Army. And for girls, speaking completely ignorance of any basic knowledge, I'd say the same sort of things, getting a job, maybe taking some courses, and the Army was not a factor for them.
Right.
But, you know, eventually maybe getting married and what have you.
Yeah.
So there weren't many of us that went to college, and fewer of us that actually graduated, too, after that. Unfortunately, I haven't kept up with my high school classes much as I'd like to, even though I stayed in Dallas. I went back to Dallas and stayed there till 85 or so. I just never stayed in touch. I think we have a reunion coming up in a couple of years, and I might make an effort to go down there.
Well, how many of your fellow students, both parents, worked? Like their mothers worked out of the home? Is that a common?
I'm trying to think now, the ones that I know. I'd say about half. And the ones who, it seems that it kind of fell along the lines of if there were, say, more than two or three kids in the family, mom worked. And if there were less, two or less, then, you know, she stayed home. And working is more of a sales, clerical type job, clerking kind of job. I think my mother was the only close to professional type of person. And worked full time.
Okay. Well, had you, I'm assuming you had to register for the draft.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you get a...
So I registered for the draft, and then if you kept... this was a... If you kept your grade point average up in college, then that helped you to avoid the draft. But I guess the real measure of whether you went into the draft or not was associated with which board you registered with. There was a lot of inequity in this, as it is, I'm sure, all over the country. So if you happened to be with a board registered in, say, a very upper middle class neighborhood in North Dallas, then their quota was less than a black neighborhood in South Dallas. So fortunately, we were in Oak Cliff, and that was kind of in the middle ground, and I was able to keep my head above water just by keeping grades up. But then the lottery came along, and I drew 336. So that was the clinching blow that kept me out of the military.
Yeah. Well, how much did that influence your decision to go on to college?
The draft? Yep. Well, I think that had a lot to do with it, that coupled with basketball. Because I knew if I could stay in college, then I would avoid the military. But, you know, I'm not sure that at that time I really was that keen to avoid the military. I mean, I was going to avoid them, but I wasn't going to go to Canada.
Right.
You know, if the time came, then I would go. And in fact, at one time, I thought to make it, you know, there was a time when everybody thought that, all guys thought that they were going to go in the military. It was just a matter of whether you were going to go in before you went to high school, or before you went to college, during college because you flunked out, or after college when you no longer had any kind of deferment, because there wasn't anything, I guess, except for MDs or whatever, that you were going to go. So to kind of make that a little bit easier, the reserves became an avenue to lighten the load, so to speak. So people tried to get into reserve units all across the country, and they got filled up pretty quickly. And then once again, there was a lot of inequity about that, because getting into the reserves is sort of like getting into the unions. It's not what you know sometimes, it's who you know. So although there was a list of candidates, and theoretically, as places became available, the list would be filled by the people higher up on the lower numbers. That wasn't always the case. So there, I applied to and came very close to joining the Marine Reserve, and had the opportunity. It's a little bit more difficult to get in the Marine Reserve than it is in the Air National Guard or whatever. But an English teacher in college who I'd asked for a reference for, what I don't remember why I asked this woman for a reference, she taught me out of it. She said this was a big mistake to go on the Marine Reserve. And I think she was speaking from being very anti-war and being older and probably more mature, and could see that she was advising me to, at all costs, to stay as far away from any military machine as possible. And so I turned down. I mean, I went to the Marine recruiter office and had a pen in my hand and stopped. This was before the lottery, too, by the way.
And why did you stop?
I guess I just had enough trepidation about it and didn't know that it was right for me, and she was pretty emphatic about it. And, you know, and things were beginning to, there was a, even in Texas, which was pro-war for a long time, there was a lot of sentiment. Now, we're not talking about California or Berkeley. We're talking about Nacogdoches, Texas, you know. And there was still some growing sentiment against the war, that it wasn't the best thing that we were doing, and that there was a lot of problems with it, and that we ought to be looking at it a little bit deeper and trying to figure out what to do. So questions were being asked.
And where did you fit in?
Well, I kind of just watched them. Watched the people ask the questions and listen to the answers. Once again, in retrospect, I'm not sure I was one way or the other.
And how did you see your brother, you know, his decisions and his kind of fate in the Army? What happened to him?
Well, I thought he was pretty lucky, and I was thankful. Yeah. I was gracious, grateful that the Army felt that way about it, and I was glad that he wasn't going to Vietnam. But the Army treated him well, and he learned. He kind of, like I said, he was running through some personality problems at the time he got out of high school, and the Army did a lot to correct that. So I thought it was a good experience.
Okay. Well, when you decide to go to college, one thing I guess I wasn't clear, or maybe I missed, is, you know, were colleges coming after you to attend them?
Let's just back up a minute, though.
Certainly.
Once again, as I became more aware of the Vietnam War and what it meant and how shallow it was, then my attitude changed to where I became against it. Just probably fell in step with everybody, with the majority of the country. But the real impact of that war didn't hit me until I began to realize where most of the other men in my high school class, or boys in my high school class, had been all the time I was in college, and why some of them hadn't come back.
Right.
So that was a significant influence on my current thinking about peace and war, just to realize that at another time, in another place, you know, I would have been right there with them and seen some of the things that they saw, did some things that they certainly aren't very proud of, and having to live with that. So, you know, I'll never forget some stories that I don't think are lies, that I heard from some friends that had been over there, some of the things that were done. So even to this day, I know... I'm in a long-term relationship with a woman here in Boston, and her brother is my age, and he served in Vietnam 2 terms, and he doesn't talk about it. So that was, once again, that whole era, I think, defined a lot of, I don't know how old you are, but at that time defined a lot of what we would come out to be, people in my generation. Now, what was it?
Wait, I'll continue on with just a couple more questions. How So how, you know, knowing what happened afterwards, how does that, how did that change your own perspective, your perspective on your decisions at the time? Say, for instance, to you know, go to college, to not sign up with the Marine Reserves. Has that changed, knowing, you know, now that, you know, you've heard the stories from your friends of who came back, or I know from my own cousins, they were very ambivalent because they were reading in the local newspaper friends that they knew in high school that had the death lists, and they were very ambivalent to see people that they knew, their names were on the paper, so they didn't know which way to come out on the war. And just because it was too close. And so, you know, there's those decisions, the immediate decisions, and now that you have this perspective of, you know, people who did come back and tell these horrible stories, how has that changed your perspective on your own decisions of, say, choosing to go to college or choosing not to join the Marine Reserves?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm certainly glad I made those decisions, because I'm not sure how I would have come out under those other influences. And it's just a lot easier to look back and say, well, I'm glad I didn't have to do that. You just never know. So I'm glad that I chose not to go in. I'm glad I chose to go to college. I'm glad I stayed in college. I'm glad I chose a high lottery number. I'm glad I stayed out of the Marines, you know. You never know if you got in the Marine Reserve, then I'm not saying that that they brainwash people, but, you know, there could have been opportunity that my attitude about serving in battle could have changed, and I might have got gung-ho, decided I wanted to take a tour of duty over in the rice fields. So without a doubt, I'm glad that I stayed away from the military as far as possible.
And how was it, and this is, you know, comes just from my being a historian, you know, Johnson, after, you know, JFK is assassinated in Dallas, and Dallas is immediately affected by this, and then Johnson becomes president. I mean, how do you see this, Johnson being Texan and being president of the United States, affecting how, say, Texas politics and the attitudes towards the war in Texas as opposed to, say, other parts of the country?
Well, I think Johnson kind of mirrored a lot of what I was thinking about the war, that initially, he didn't think much about it. He didn't think it was going to amount to what it turned out to be, that it wasn't going to be the thorn in the side that of America that it turned out to be, and that it wouldn't really affect his presidency. But, like, I thought that it really didn't affect my life. You know, yeah, there are people going over there fighting, and I'm going to try to stay out of there, but, it didn't affect it on a day-to-day basis. But as time went on, then he and I both changed our attitudes. And it's unfortunate that he still had to make decisions about concerning the war, whereas my only decision was trying to stay in school and stay out of it. Yeah. But he had to make decisions about what direction the war went into. And of course, he was getting a lot of pressure from both sides about what to do about that. And I suspect weighed pretty heavily on him. Must have been an extremely difficult, agonizing experience for a person who's pretty, more or less, a gentle giant of a man, and to have to decide, you know, what direction this war is going to take, how much more sacrifice is going to be made, and or how can we get out of this and save face? And I'm not saying anything that I conjured. I mean, what I'm saying is more or less, I think, a reflection of most historians, that it really beat him down. And I feel that it probably shortened his life. I saw LBJ. He, you know, retired to his ranch outside of Johnson City, which is, once again, up in the Texas Hill Country. So when I used to go visit Mother, then I'd turn west out of Austin up on 290 through Johnson City, and you could drive right by his house. And oftentimes, as a lot of other people would just duck down into through the fence and come up there. He had a little large flowing creek that ran from the house, could just stop and see his house and his homestead and the like. And I stopped there one time, and he was out there fishing. And I just kind of waved to him. It was across the bank from about here across the window, or here across the room, waved at him, thought about him.
Did he wave back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I feel sorry for him, but that because he had to do the things he did and how difficult it must have been for him to think about that. But then, and at the same time, how he must think, as I would have thought, well, how did I ever get into this? You know, why wasn't I more knowledgeable early on? And how do I get out of this? So I'm pretty sympathetic to him. I'm probably sure that others could have done better. So I guess I felt he just kind of went the way of everybody else and a lot of people in Texas along that same track.
Okay. Well, to get back to you and going off to college, and you said you wanted to pursue basketball. You had some opportunities to pursue basketball, and I just wanted to make clear in my own mind, had colleges come seeking you, or had you go, you know, did you go out to seek colleges?
A little of both.
Playing basketball?
A little of both. I went to the ones that I wanted to go to, then I made contact with them, usually first through letters, and then went on a couple tryouts. But then a lot of them, and that's how I went with Stephen F. Austin. But other colleges, not there weren't that many now. It's just, we're not talking about this recruiting service here. So I think most of the outright offers I got were from junior colleges, more established junior colleges. There's a whole loop of junior colleges in Texas that, but I was interested in a four-year school. So I made contact with Rice and Stephen F. Austin in North Texas. Abilene Christian, and I think that's about it.
Yeah. Okay. And had you thought much about kind of the academic side of life when you went off to college? And like what you would, how did you come to decide on majoring in chemistry?
Like I said, I thought science, because I had taken all the science courses and then I had an interest in that, so I was going to major in science. I didn't know what discipline it was going to be in. I guess it wasn't until my sophomore year in college that I began to focus on chemistry. And that was probably due just to my past interest in chemistry. The chemistry professors seemed like nice guys. There was this, although he never had an impact, I always marveled at this one fellow, Harold Abbott, who was the chairman of the chemistry department. So he wasn't, he wasn't a mentor. He didn't care beans about me because he didn't know me. He taught one semester of my freshman chemistry class, but it was a relatively large class. It was around, 60 people, and so I didn't stand out. But he was also the timer for the basketball games. So, whenever I'd check in or something, he would be there, And I don't think at that time he connected me with chemistry, But, and he was this relatively short fellow that was always dressed in a white shirt and a bow tie. And he was in his late 60s at this time. And he was formerly a professor at Columbia University in New York City. And I often wondered, just how in the hell did this guy go from Columbia? Now, I knew what Columbia was and what it stood for. Yeah. Now, how did this guy go from Columbia University in New York City to Stephen F. Austin State College in Nacogdoches, Texas? And, to this day, I wonder about that. So, but I guess because he was kind of mysterious, that kind of helped solidify my bond with the chemistry department, that this was something unusual, Not that I wanted to be like him and wear a bow tie, but... it kind of set it apart from the biology teachers. I only took physics, but I wasn't interested in that. Then there was a newly acquired faculty member in the chemistry department that came on board about the time I got there, a guy named Jim Garrett, who's still there, as an organic chemistry teacher. And he was enthusiastic. You can see, once again, that doing a little bit of teaching myself, that when
at all times.
Newer faculty are always a little bit more enthusiastic about conveying information and excitement than older faculty. They're kind of in the humdrum, so to speak. So I think that enthusiasm came across in organic chemistry from Dr. Garrett than from others. And then that kind of helped facilitate this bond with chemistry. So these small occurrences or feelings, I think, added up to help me. About the time I got to sophomore year, I decided, and that was about the time you had to declare a major, too. You weren't going to be undecided for the rest of the time, that it was going to be chemistry. I felt like, you know, a lot of basketball players and athletes would choose physical education, but, I mean, let's face it, we all knew deep down inside that the only job you're going to get being a PE major was being a coach. And that wasn't going to make a whole lot of money, you know. Not that I was greedy or so, but I think I wanted something a little bit more out of it besides being a teacher, a high school teacher and a coach. So apart from education, Stephen F. Austin had a forestry program. It's one of the five forestry schools in the country at that time. Mm-hmm. And I used to always admire these guys that were going to go off and on real field trips. I mean, these guys went out and camped in the woods, which was fun, you know, and they could look at you know, 100 different plants or insects and tell you what they are and what they were good for and how you controlled them. So that was that was neat biology, you know, it was applicable. So I always thought that if I had to do over again, I think I'd want to major in forestry, but it was too late, you know. So chemistry was just kind of the way to go.
How much were you influenced by the stereotype of the jock can't do, you know, like academic?
Well, I didn't fall into that mode because I knew that stereotype existed and other people felt that way. But fortunately, I kept my grades up good enough that I didn't fall into that. I didn't get put into that class or that group of jocks. It was a little bit apart from them. And then I didn't want to be in that group. I knew that I wasn't going to play basketball beyond college. So some of those guys thought that they were going to continue on. Actually, one of our basketball players played for a little bit in the NBA, but that was about it. But I guess it's hard to, once again, when we graduated from high school, it was hard to see what we were going to do past 19. That I guess oftentimes, when we graduated from college at 23, it began, or 22, difficult to see what you're going to do past 24. But I kind of felt like by the time I got to be a junior that I was going to have to figure out something to do, at least for the next 5 or 10 years. And it better be something that I could get a job in. And I didn't like teaching. And so chemistry seemed like a place that I could get a job.
What did you think you could be doing? Well,
there was a lot of chemical industry along the Gulf Coast. Granted, I didn't like that, but there was a lot of it going on. And then there were, as I said, Better World Through Chemistry was going on, whether it's DuPont or Mallinckrodt or Monsanto. You know, I wasn't wedded to Texas. I was prepared to leave, and I applied for those jobs. I actually applied to those companies when I graduated. Didn't get any offers, but so. I just thought that there was a better opportunity to have a stimulating career and make a decent, stable salary as a chemist compared to other things that I had any kind of interest in. You weren't going to make a lot of money being a forestry person. Mm-hmm. School teachers, I think they have a good job, but probably make more money now than they did before, but they weren't making a whole lot of money then.
Well, was there the dream back there somewhere that you would play professional basketball?
Never.
Never?
Never. I knew I wouldn't. I didn't have those levels. In fact, I didn't even finish up in college. So I, after my sophomore year, then I began to have some problems physically with my knees. You know, we all get basketball players with knees or so. And unfortunately, once again, in retrospect, the treatment I got wasn't as good as it could have been. I'm not sure how good it could have been at that era, but the corrective measures probably did more harm than good. So my skill level fell quite a bit between my sophomore and junior year, and my playing time and proficiency along the same lines waned. So by the time I was a senior, then I wasn't even playing very much. And as my interest and ability in basketball began to decline, then my interest in trying to figure out something to do with the rest of my life and what meaningful job I was going to get was increasing. So there was this shift, you know, in outlook.
Well, when did you decide to pick up a minor in biology? Where was biology in your decisions?
Well, I just kind of fell into place that you had to have a minor in something.
Okay.
And so I picked up, yeah. So I think in those first couple of years when I was kind of undecided, I was taking biology and chemistry. So I'd accumulated, I think this is my reasoning now, that I accumulated enough credits in biology that all I had to do was just take one or two more than I had a minor.
Okay, yeah.
So is that kind of like a default pathway? Yeah. So interesting, but I did take one biology course that at Stephen F. that I remember. I don't remember anything about any other biology courses except a physiology course, and it was in summer term. And this is organ physiology, you know. And I thought that was pretty interesting because it kind of taught me about that. Kind of a reductionist view, you know, if you talk about an organism, whether it's a tree or a cow or a human being, but inside that organism there are separate integrated units that are working together to maintain that life form. And also we touched a little bit about on cell biology, so then I can see that the same sort of scenario exists within an organ. And at that time, I didn't know about subcellular organelles, but all that kind of refines down to this other thing. So that was neat. But one thing that I did, I think when I was a senior, the chemistry department taught biochemistry also.
Okay.
And there was one semester of biochemistry taught by one of the more esteemed faculty members, and I took it. Because I didn't want to take an advanced physical chemistry course. And it was mostly intermediary metabolism. We memorized a lot of pathways about how cells metabolize glucose to convert it to something else, or how cells synthesize lipids, or process nucleic acids, or synthesize bases, or whatever. Now, that's all chemistry. I mean, those are chemical reactions that the cell does. Granted, it's facilitated by little enzymes that are nothing more than catalytic components, but it's nothing but pure chemistry. You're moving carbons around and you're shifting bonds, just like organic chemistry. And that was neat because it applied a familiar perspective to drive my interest, that the same sort of things that I liked about chemistry, you know, mixing molecules together and formulating new substances and trying to figure out what they do or whatever, was really going on all the time in a much more exquisite fashion and scenario. So I think that was the first time I got interested in really molecules and what goes on, or cells, and what goes on inside of cells. And that, I think, I later returned. Because of that, I later, when I started this master's program, kind of leaned towards biochemistry. Once again, it was another chemistry program, but then I was concentrating on biochemistry because of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because biochemistry, I was a bio-sci major, and all the biochemistry was in the biology department, broadly defined, School of Biological Sciences.
Yeah, I don't know why, but some schools have... had biochemistry taught by the chemistry department, and some, I think yours is in the majority, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was that part of the biology curriculum, would you know, as a major, that they would have had to take biochemistry?
No.
Or was it clearly seen as the realm of chemistry?
It was, I mean, biology students certainly could take it. It was open to them. And I suspect apply it towards a minor in chemistry.
Right.
But they wouldn't be able to apply it towards their major in biochemistry. And that, you know, and that seems kind of stupid, doesn't it, when you think about it. I mean, I'm not sure that it biochemistry should be in one versus the other. You can make an argument either way.
Right.
But certainly, you know, kids ought to, clearly in a biology department, unless it's some kind of animal biology or zoology or something like that, ought to, and you could argue either way around, it clearly ought to be exposed to biochemistry. Molecular biology, for that matter, too. But I guess the other, so the textbook that this professor used, even at that time, was an old, outdated biochemistry textbook. But because he'd lectured from it for the past 10 or 15 years, he was familiar with it. But in it, they had, it was dotted with excerpts bringing to attention disease processes and how it led to abnormalities in biochemistry, principally like inborn errors in metabolism, that if an individual is missing this enzyme involved in, say, amino acid breakdown, phenylalanine breakdown, then they developed a severe neurological syndrome, and that led to tests for PKUs. All right. So, and then diabetes is a result of elevated glucose, and the reason it's elevated because insulin doesn't work. Okay, so glucose doesn't get metabolized. Now, at that time, nobody knew why, how glucose led to all the other secondary effects. But so, in it, dispersed in these studies were some real relevant examples about the importance of biochemistry towards, you know, medicine or health. So I think at that time I began to think about the idea about, well, you know, with some knowledge, especially in biochemistry or even chemistry at that time, you can do things that really have an impact. And I kind of had that feeling, you know, with chemistry, but it was more of a, you know, what, making new fibers or developing a better process for petroleum products or maybe, you know, synthesizing a new derivative on penicillin that would make it react or have a longer half-life or something like that, but not in the context of actually doing something fundamental to helping, say, health and combat disease. And that's a pretty altruistic thought to have. You know, it feels good to think that way, you know? Yeah, that's something I'd like to do. I like that feeling. I mean, that's really why we always think that. Okay.
Well, was there this kind of, where was this need for you to do something kind of altruistic or socially valuable?
But there wasn't a lot of motivation or need there. It just kind of crossed my mind that, you know, that there's an opportunity and these are neat things because they have direct application towards suffering and whatever, you know, but I just didn't jump on it and say I want to go to med school.
Okay, right.
Or go to graduate school. Just says, you know, this is a nice avenue, a potential way to really make contributions. You know, here's these guys, Manning and Best discovered insulin, you know. A lot of Krebs, the Krebs cycle.
Right.
You know, recognition, notoriety. Yeah. I mean, just like in chemical reactions, you know, whether it's a Friedel-Crafts or a Erlenmeyer or whatever.